Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Mayor. Got all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 17th day of August, Anno Domini 2024. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Whoopsie. Because the cameras are unhappy. Here comes the news. This week, at their Made by Google 2024 event, Google launched some new hardware and had an event about it. Well, sort of. Yes, they announced four new iPhones.
Not likely.
Excuse me, Pixel phones. Wow. Take my eyes off the script for 1 second.
And you've gone astray.
And I'm gone.
Yeah.
Four new Pixel phones, the Pixel 9, the Pixel 9 Pro, the Pixel 9 Pro XL, and the phone I lust after, the Pixel 9 Fold. Of course, it's $1,800 to start with, so I'm not buying one. They also announced the Pixel Watch 3 and the Pixel Earbuds 2. But you'd have been forgiven if you missed it, because it took almost half an hour before Google actually talked about the new gadgets. Instead, it waxed ecstatic over Gemini, its AI model. Google's event made its true priorities clear. AI matters more to Google than Pixel, more than Android, more than just about anything. None of the announcements were really about how great the hardware was. They were all about how well they'd run Gemini. People got practically orgasmic over how fast results came back and how quickly Gemini could run your entire life. Don't get me wrong, Gemini is great. If I've forgotten when Ellen suggested we have lunch and I'm too lazy to actually open the text message she sent, I can have Gemini do it for me and put it on my calendar. What a time saver. The hardware was terrific. New cameras, faster processors, better watch displays, better earbuds. But who cares about that when the focus was how well they'd integrate and run Gemini? If you're hot for AI to run your life, Made by Google 2024 left you looking for a cigarette. If you're more interested in good hardware, digging into the event revealed some fast, hot new products at some eye-popping prices. But if hardware designed specifically to handle large AI models doesn't float your boat, move along. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Made by Google 2024, it was Gemini all along.
Thank extra you. Points if you get the reference.
Yes, extra points if you get the reference. And your choices are, I love AI, should be interesting, I did like the hardware, and meh. So far, I don't see, what did I do? Oh, I see, I have to actually type the real word, okay.
$1,800.
Type.
Yeah.
And they still missing the boat, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah, it's a, yeah.
I like it. I know I'm preaching to the same platform that I've been preaching to the last, decade. Focus on the GD battery, folks.
Yep.
Get longer battery life. That way you don't have to worry, oh, where can I plug mine in to charge it? Is there a charging station here? I hear that so often around places. Do you have a charging station? Well, you know, if these phones would have a little bit bigger battery.
Yep. One of the things that both Apple and Google have done is if you take your phone that has wireless charging built in, the Qi charger, you can charge another phone just by touching your two phones together.
If it also has Qi charging.
Who's willing to give up some of their charge?
Exactly right. Exactly right. A mom might do that for their kids. That's it.
No, even with a phone, I wouldn't think she might.
Yeah, because she doesn't want to miss out on a call if some emergency calls in from one of the other kids.
I've got to run my farm.
There are some new battery technologies, solid-state batteries. Salt, one is salt. And there's just a lot of them out there, but none of them are proven, and none of them are doable yet, really, right? They're all in, in testing phases. But once they come out, we'll have lighter, denser storage, which is exactly what you want in a phone. Mm-hmm. A lighter phone, a thinner phone, but with more energy density to store more charge. But that we're nowhere near that yet.
I mean, because you take a person, you know, in the beginning of the day, they go in and check their emails and all that. And then throughout the day, you know, they're checking stuff. Or on their lunch break, all of a sudden they want to watch a movie or listen to a book. You know, I mean, it's taking battery life.
Yep. Tell you what, back in the 60s, the big difference, the biggest difference, aside from the magic, right, like teleporters and stuff, the big difference between Star Trek and reality was no wires. And then we got Wi-Fi, but we still had to plug things in.
Yep, somewhere, yeah.
Somewhere. That was the big, and that was the real big difference.
You were still tethered to something.
Right.
Then if Tesla had got his way and we'd had broadcast power.
Nikola Tesla, not the company.
Yeah, Nikola Tesla. But then what? Estinghouse.
Estinghouse.
Yeah. Edison and Westinghouse convinced him he can't make any money selling nothing, so we got to sell copper wire.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
We would have...
broadcast power.
Wardenclyffe was broadcasting power and doing a great job of it. There's pictures of Edison... no, Tesla... in his lab with Mark Twain, believe it or not. They were friends. How cool is that?
Oh, neat.
Walking around with a
light bulb.
One of those, though. Fluorescent bulb in his hand, not plugged into anything and lit.
Lit up.
You can kind of do that now if you go stand under an electric tower. A fluorescent bulb will light up pretty good. It just doesn't go far enough.
Right. It basically, that's what he did. It was essentially that, but not quite the same way.
There's enough radio waves and microwaves and you know, all sorts of waves flying around us. You think somebody would figure out something, accumulate all that power together.
Well, plus this, the sun. I mean, depending, like right now, they're talking, I think it's actually today and tomorrow, that we're supposed to get a few more serious sun flares,
right?
Which is also going to be great if you're a photographer, as far as aurora.
Yep.
I mean the
yeah, it might make it as far as south again.
Yeah, they're the aurora people. You know,
you don't have to think of us as very far south, do you?
No, but we're south enough for the aurora.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, photographers have been going literally bonkers the past couple of years right now because of all the solar flares and the great pictures that they're getting. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, on the other hand, the ham radio operators can't just squat.
Yeah, it shuts some of the bands down, and it's just something, well, you know, again, we have totally no control over.
Right.
And you just do what you can. But that's the whole fun of the hobby, too, is going through these diverse situations and making the best of it.
But that doesn't, you know, that's when we're talking about power, we don't have any way to harness that power.
Yep, no.
But as far as the stuff that Tesla was doing, we're doing it on small scales now. When you have what Steve was just talking about, when you have a Qi charger, QI is the thing, not the British comedy show, you have a near field communication connection between a power producer, the little pad you put it on, and the power acceptor, which is your phone.
Yep.
And so you can put it down on that pad and it will charge as soon as it's close enough. I've seen hobbyists who made light up things that rather than plug them in, they use a Qi type connection.
Mm-hmm. Close enough is about an inch and a half.
Right. I have seen there are experimental roads in foreign countries that charge cars, electric cars, as they drive.
Mm-hmm. I saw a picture the other day where the biking path between the lanes was covered with solar chargers. So the bikers get a
solar panels.
The bikers get a sunshade, and we're generating power along the way anyway.
Yep, it's a very clever idea. They're also doing it with car parks, but the sun and now we it used to be the problem is solar panels used to be about 10% efficient.
Yeah, now
then they went up to 30% efficient. That's three times more efficient. That's not bad.
And they're not very recyclable because they've used up all their chemistry.
Right. What I found interesting was there was a guy who bought a whole array of solar panels, 10 cents on the dollar because they were used,
mm-hmm.
and got enough power out of them to power his home.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He just needed more of them.
One single home, yeah.
Yeah. But he could do it. And I have a friend who lives in the southern tier who has an array of solar panels on his property and runs his home off
grid.
It, charges his car from it. It's all does everything.
Well, that's the thing, too. Now they have the technology that they're even making roofing material. Mm-hmm. Shingles and all that other stuff that have solar panels in them. And down south, like you say, Arizona, New Mexico and all that, a lot of the homes down there are investing into putting that in. And these homes are going totally off-grid.
Yep.
Because you know, the population growth, it's helping that, too,
right.
And that it's not the big demands, you know, because of the heat. And, you know, the air conditioners all kick on, and all of a sudden you're having blackouts and all that. You don't hear it as much because they are going to solar energy.
And it was interesting because I talked to a friend of mine who also has solar panels. And he was saying that his energy is net zero every year. In the summer, he generates more than he uses.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, because we're in Western New York, he uses more than he generates. But it's net zero all year long. So he sells some back to the
power company
in the summer, and he pays for more in the winter. And at the end of the year, it's pretty much net zero all the way around. So.
Can't argue with that.
The company in the building next to us sells wind turbines, and their big thing is green paint stripper.
Ooh.
Which is kind of cool. But so he talked about he used to have several wind turbines powering his own business, and would sell the energy back to RG&E and back like that. Apparently, there was some weird law passed that if you don't use power from RG&E, you still have to pay the state?
Yes, yeah. That's changed.
So even if you're off-grid, you still have an electric bill.
Right.
Yeah.
My next-door neighbor and the people catty-corner behind us are putting in geothermal. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Don't let them dig too far and create a volcano.
Exactly.
Have the magma come up.
Right.
Well, I used to, when I had property down in North Carolina, you know, it's just a plot of land. Every year, I got a water bill.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even though there was no house there, it was literally just a plot of land with future, you know, anticipation of building a house there. But, yeah, every year I got I think it was like $23.
You want the right to have water in the future house you might build someday?
You had to pay this like $23 a year.
Yep.
So I'd always get, you know, from the town, you know, Pinehurst, North Carolina, this water bill for $23. Okay, and I set a check.
Sure, send it in.
Yeah.
One of the problems that my sister-in-law works for a builder in Arizona, one of the problems they have is getting water rights.
Yeah.
You can't build there any longer without water rights, which is understandable. They're running out of water.
Mm-hmm.
There's just it's a desert.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got two sister-in-laws that lived there. You know, Sandy's parent. Two sisters lived there in where is it? Scottsdale.
Yeah, that's near where my sister-in-law
is. Yeah, and
who thought it was a good idea to move to the desert?
A whole lot of people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
lot of people.
We were just out there a few years ago, and it is unbelievable, the housing boom there. Of course, I'd hate to come home drunk.
Oh, they're identical.
You
every
drive into a complex, and they're all the same color. So you can't say, I live in the beige house. The way they differentiate themselves is they try to get their door colors.
The door colors are different, and they put things on their fences.
Yeah,
We're the ones with the cactus on the fence.
Yep.
Yeah.
That doesn't narrow down much in the desert.
Well, that's right. I still use Google Maps to get to my sister-in-law's. Yeah. I cannot tell which house is hers.
Yeah, no, it's... Of course, they say right now there's a lot of places, like Florida, I guess, is losing a lot of people because of the heat and everything else, and they're all going to Wyoming.
Yes.
Where they're selling their houses because of the flood insurance and everything else. It's driving them out of the state that they're moving up to Wyoming, where they can buy a house for half of what they made on selling their house in Florida.
And in a few decades, it won't be snowing there.
That's exactly right.
It'll all be underwater.
Yeah.
Well, Florida will be.
Wyoming. Yeah, that's what I mean.
A friend of mine moved to Bar None and built a house and built two observatories so far on his income. I said, How are you doing this? Is you have an idea how cheap it is to live here? You have no idea.
What I find amazing, too, though, talk about, you know, changes in the earth and that. There's a stretch of the highway that goes up from San Diego on up to San Francisco, main highway. And there's one point where you can go along this cliffside.
Oh, yes.
And you see these bright marks going up the hill. And what it is how much that highway is sinking.
Yeah.
Every few years. And, you know, it takes maybe 5 years to maybe move a few inches. But you see over the years, it goes back up to the 70s when it was way up here.
Yep.
And you're thinking, wait a minute. This at the time was like 1990, I believe it was. And we're way down here.
Yep.
Yeah, that part might be out in the ocean.
Yep. That's going to, one of these days, it's just going to calve off and go. It's just the way it's going to be.
And I mean, the computer modeling is showing the effects of that's happening, you know, to our Earth, what we're doing to it as far as causing erosion and everything else and the hot summers that we're getting and
that's
weird
kind of the
winters.
Controversy. Are we doing it or does it just happen automatically?
Right.
Okay. If it happens automatically, it takes a few hundred thousand years to switch back and forth, so we're screwed either way.
Yeah. Well, look at the icebergs that are melting like crazy. I heard one major one that evidently was some type of blockage is all of a sudden moving now south. And that, of course, is going to cause it to melt.
Yep.
And cause water levels to rise more and more.
Puts fresh water into the ocean, which screws up the
ecosystem there,
the tide and the currents and the jet stream and
yep, absolutely. And at the other end, that's water. Let's talk fire. There's the Yellowstone caldera.
Mm-hmm.
Yellowstone has a super volcano,
1,000 cubic kilometers.
Yes.
Of magma.
Yes, just sitting around underneath it, it's past due.
Yeah, it erupts every 500,000 or 600,000 years, and it was last erupted about 600,000 years ago.
Yep.
So any in the next 100,000 years or so, it's going to go.
And it'll spread ash over most of the United
States. Mount
and the rest
St.
of
Helen.
The world, yeah.
Folks,
worse, way worse. But yeah, but same idea.
Yeah. Well, look at last year? Excuse me. They had the fires up in Canada.
Yep.
And how down here, if folks, you know, it's easy to
asthma
forget.
Asthma problems and everything.
I mean, you woke up and went outside, and it was hazy and cloudy, and you're thinking, wait a minute, it doesn't look like it's going to rain. But it was all the smoke being driven down from Canada because they couldn't control the wildfires up there.
Right.
Because nobody lives in some of these regions, and they catch on fire because... You know, the brush and everything else, because, again, the climate change is so drastic.
Right. It gets so dry, all it takes is one lightning strike. And you're done. You know, so, yeah, I get it.
It was one of the few times I saw my dad pull rank at Kodak. He got a call at, like, 3 in the morning. There's this ash all over Kodak Park. We think something went wrong. He says, get someone else to do it. I'll be in at 6 like I normally am. And it was Mount St. Helens.
Yep.
Just, even, you know, this far away, we still got a fine layer of ash over the whole city.
Yeah, mm-hmm. people don't realize the magnitude of some of these things, the power that nature has that we don't realize.
And the cool thing about it, again, is going all the way around, is computers. Nowadays, we can find out about this stuff so much faster and be more informed of all the stuff, because back in the, you know, back in the 80s and all that, yeah, there was the internet, but it was the old dial-up and everything else. Well, now you can turn on your computer. Heck, you can put it into your phone,
right?
And see, you know, get news flashes and everything else of what's going on in the world and that, and instantly.
Yep. You sign up for alerts.
Yeah.
So you know ahead of time. Yeah,
your storm, you know, a lot of folks nowadays, you know, they want to know how the weather is. You know, most of the stations around here all have their own weather app. You can put it on your phone and, oh, let's see how the weather's going to be for today. Oh, it's going to rain a little later on this afternoon. I better get, if I want to get stuff, chores done outside, I better go out this morning and get it done because, yeah, I'm going to be get soaked.
I better bring an umbrella if I'm walking around at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, the latest thing in the weather apps is hyperlocal. It's not the weather for Rochester. It's, you know, it's the weather for, you know, this street in Fairport.
Right, right, right. Yeah. I'll tell you my favorite weather app. It's a website. My favorite weather website is a place that shows real time lightning strikes in your area. I don't even know how they do it. Cool. I don't even know how they do it.
Yeah.
But it shows it hit, and it shows the shock with the sound wave going out. And when it passes my house, I hear it.
Lightningmaps.org?
Good question. Probably.
That's Google's first hit.
Lightningmaps.org, yep. That's the one.
There are so many, and that's what people don't realize. There are thousands of lightning strikes every minute somewhere in the country.
Yep. Yeah, lightning. What is it? Lightningmaps.org. And you can put in your latitude and longitude so you can center it on your house. So, you know, here in Rochester, it's 43.1 something and 77.5 something. And you can put that in. It'll center it on your house, on your area. You can watch lightning hit around you. It's so cool. I admit that amuses me.
Well, it's in our house, it was always my mom and my sister would run to the basement and hide, and me and my dad and my brother would go onto the porch and watch.
Yeah.
We used to, when I had the house up on Roby Drive, used to love it because we just opened up the garage door because it was facing, you know, and just sit there with a lawn chair, sit in the lawn chair and watch the lightning storms going up over the lake and that. And it's unbelievable. You're like, look at that. You know, it's like,
I'll tell you what is scary for a kid who lives in Rochester, New York. When I went to, for two stories. The newer story is when we first took my daughter to Rockford, Illinois for college. There are signs to the tornado shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whoa.
I didn't need that.
I see hurricane warning routes when we're driving through the South.
Right, right. And I was doing a seminar in Florida, and a bunch of people from out of state, and a hurricane came along, and people were standing in the windows of this hotel, not a hotel room, a hotel suite, you know, where they have
lobby?
Meetings. No, meeting room.
Oh, okay.
Hotel meeting room, floor-to-ceiling windows, and the windows are bowing in and out like 3 inches. And I thought, you people are going to get sucked right out of this.
Yep.
I went in the hall and said, where do I go? And they sent me someplace. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And if you call in, we'll even answer computer questions today, as opposed to weather. Back in just a couple of minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. It just amuses me. Straight ahead jazz in the background is polka. Puts it on a polka bed. That's okay. Whatever works for you, Rob. Okay, on Tuesday, it is Patch Tuesday week. On Tuesday, Microsoft released updates to fix at least 90, that's 90, security vulnerabilities in Windows and related software, including a whopping 6 zero-day flaws that are already being actively exploited by attackers.
And that's pretty well average.
Yeah, there are probably suggestions that were put in back in, say, 2005.
Yeah, somewhere along that line. This month's bundle of update joy from Redmond includes patches for security holes in Office, .NET, Visual Studio, Azure, Copilot, Microsoft Dynamics, Teams, Secure Boot, and, of course, Windows itself. And by the way, you may think, I don't use Office. Yes, you do. It's in there. I don't use .NET. Yes, you do. It's in there. I don't use Visual Studio. Yes, you do. It's in there. And I could go right down the line.
It's part
of the
OS.
Those things are all running in the background, whether you like it or not. Of the 6 zero-day weaknesses Microsoft addressed this month, half are local privilege escalation vulnerabilities, meaning they are primarily useful for attackers when combined with other flaws or access. Microsoft's advisories include little information about two of the privileged escalation flaws, other than to note that they are being actively exploited. Microsoft says one exists in the Windows kernel, which is the heart of the operating system and is being actively exploited, but that has a high attack complexity, meaning that it can be tricky for malware or miscreants to exploit reliably. But of course, once they do, they're in.
And then pretty soon there'll be a script, and anyone can follow it.
Exactly. Another zero-day this month is a remote code execution flaw that exists when built-in Windows Edge browser is being operated in Internet Explorer mode. IE mode is not on by default in Edge, but it can be enabled to work with older websites or applications whose programmers are too friggin' lazy to support modern Chromium-based browsers. I'm sorry, that was editorial.
Mm-hmm.
Another is a zero-day flaw that allows malware to bypass the mark of the web, which is a security feature in Windows that marks files downloaded from the Internet as untrusted. So, you know, when you download something, you go to run it, it says, you sure? Because you don't know where this came from?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It bypasses that. The final zero-day this month is a remote code execution flaw in Microsoft Project, used by 4 people across the world. However, Microsoft and multiple security firms point out that this vulnerability only works on customers who have already disabled notifications about the security risks of running VBA macros in Microsoft Project. Not the best idea, as malware has a long history of hiding within malicious Office macros, but so many people run macros, and so you get that pop-up 50 times a day. The first thing most people do is turn it off. Separately, Adobe released 11 security bulletins addressing at least 71 security vulnerabilities across a range of products, including Adobe Illustrator, Dimension, Photoshop, InDesign, Acrobat, and Reader, Bridge, Substance 3D Stager, Commerce, InCopy, and Substance 3D Sampler / Substance 3D Designer. Adobe says it is not aware of active exploitation of any of the flaws if fixed this week. It's a good idea for Windows users to stay current with security updates from Microsoft, which can quickly pile up otherwise. It doesn't mean you have to install them on Patch Tuesday each month. Indeed, waiting a day or three before updating is a sane response, given that sometimes updates go awry, and usually within a few days, Microsoft has patched any issues with its patches. It also is imperative to back up your data and or image your Windows drive before applying any new updates. So,
CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike. So, are you backed up, imaged up, and patched up? Give us a call up, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. It was a bounteous group of them to this month. It's ludicrous.
And they keep saying how secure it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If you're I use Linux, so I'll take this as an example. If you're a Linux user, you probably get something close to that number of fixes every month anyway. But you get them in little dribs and drabs. And nowadays, in most modern Linux versions, they happen in the background.
Yeah, you don't know.
You just get a little notice that says you've been updated. Or click here to update. And that's all you have to do. And it happens in the background. You don't have to reboot. I haven't rebooted my machine in, I don't know, forever.
Everybody, check your uptime right now.
Well, I had a guy who worked for me.
14 days, 32 minutes.
I had a guy who worked for me who got really angry because the uptime counter rolled over to zero.
Oh, 32-bit?
32-bit. It rolled over to zero.
So 4 billion seconds.
4 billion seconds, which however many days that is. It rolled over to zero, and therefore he didn't have the record uptime anymore. So, yeah, it was years and years of this thing running. And it was always updated. It was always on the latest thing. You just didn't have to reboot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's...
That can't be right.
What?
4 billion seconds says 46,000 days.
Which is how many days?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's 4 trillion seconds?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
So 4 million is 46 days. Yeah, 4 billion is 46,000 days.
Okay. Maybe it was 16-bit at the time.
Maybe it was a signed integer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go. At any rate, the point is you should update regularly. And I do not recommend not rebooting every once in a while. Particularly if you're like some of us who run 50 different things all the time, there's memory leaks, there's stuff that just stays in memory because programmers don't care about you, and, you know, cruft happens. So every once in a while, it doesn't hurt to reboot your system.
Yeah, just refresh and, like you say, clear the cache and, you know, have it run a little bit smoother.
And that's sort of the side effect of needing to reboot Windows so often, is that stuff happens.
Stuff happens. There's no question of that, but it seems to happen much more often to Windows.
Yeah.
And part of it is because everything interacts so completely, and because so many different people work on different parts of the system. You know, one of the things that keeps Linux as clean as it is Linus Torvalds. The guy who created Linux is still the guy who okays everything that goes into the kernel. Now, that doesn't mean you can't run a program you download from the internet that screws things up. But when the Linux itself will run clean and easy because Torvalds okays everything that goes in and tests the living heck right out of it before it's okayed. And even so, he makes mistakes.
Yeah.
There are updates and patches for that, but it's a lot clearer than a lot of the other boosts. So,
let's see, how old is Linus, and when do we have to worry about?
Well, exactly.
He's 54, so we may not have to worry about a succession plan for a while.
For a while, yeah. Well, he does have other people who work on things.
Yeah.
He's not good at delegating.
Mm-hmm.
So he still does a lot of it himself, but he's got
a lot of programmers are like that. This is my program. I'm writing it. You go away.
Exactly. And that leads to the problem that somebody like Dave had, where he had that program that he was using that he loved, and then the person died.
Yeah.
And now what? There's
your
nobody
SOL.
To take it over. Right.
Yeah.
So, no, I get that. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hey, how you guys doing? A few shows ago, probably a half a dozen at least, you made a mention of a movie, and I wanted to just give you, and all the listeners who heard it, perhaps, I'm going to watch it because I've never seen it, and I was in 1975. Today's Saturday, August 17th, 24, at 5:30 p.m. on local channel, it's the TV channel, 46-7, just a movie channel.
Yeah.
Hugo Award Best Science Fiction Movie of 1975, Wayne is Dog, will air.
Oh, nice.
Remember you mentioned Alvy Moore?
Yep. Alvy Moore, the great Alvy Moore.
Yeah. And anybody who wants to find out anything about Alvy, go to Wikipedia, the movie or just look him up. He's got his own page. I mean, the man has a lot of experience that who would ever know.
He was an amazing human being. I've told the story many times. I was doing dinner theater in Detroit at the Gratiot Inn. G-R-A. I don't remember, but it ends in a T. And he was, I was walking through the lobby, getting ready to go downstairs and you know, get ready for the show. And there he was, sitting there eating dinner. And I walked up to him and you know, I said, "You're L.V. Moore." And he kind of looked up, you know, he's in the middle of eating. If you don't want to be bothered, I get that. And I said, "I get it. You don't want to be bothered. I'm going to ask you just one quick question. How the hell did you get them to let you film the ending to A Boy and His Dog?" His face lit up because there was no IMDb at that time. I clearly not only watched the movie but sat through the credits and remembered him.
And then what? VCRs weren't that common.
And VCRs weren't around. Certainly not for actors living out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
And he beamed. He kicked the chair out across from me. He said, "Sit down." He bought me dinner. We talked the business, not, you know, what it was like to work with Arnold the Pig. Mm-hmm. He talked about the business until somebody came up and grabbed me because I was late getting ready for the show.
Oops.
But it was, what a great man. What a terrific guy.
Great opportunity.
And he was a smart, smart man. I mean, you know, he played an idiot on Green Acres. But he was, you know, Hank, Agent, your County Kimball. But he was a smart, funny, interesting man. I really liked him. Thank you, Ken, for bringing that memory up.
You're welcome. You guys have a splendid day, and I hope whoever wants to try it, take a look. I was in high school at the time. I think I was a junior. My math is right. But you guys have a splendid day, and I'll be listening.
Well, right. You too. Thank you. Thank
Sounds
you so
good.
Much.
Right, bye-bye.
I did not catch the name of the movie. Can you type it into the thing?
A Boy and His Dog, and I'm trying to...
The movie...
I didn't catch the network that he said it was on, so I'm trying to find
it. Oh, is it A Boy and His Dog? Is that the movie he was talking about?
Yeah, it's airing today.
Yeah, on channel... What was it? 47-1?
Yeah, I don't know what network that is.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, Boy and His Dog, great film. And I asked him about that. And if you see the movie, you will understand what I'm talking about. Or if you read the book by Harlan Ellison, you will understand what I'm talking about. It's a terrific movie. It stars a completely unknown young man named Don Johnson. who later, of course, went on to be Miami Vice and all of that.
A number of different.
But, it was A Boy and His Dog is a great film. It's a 1975 film, so it's got a slightly different pacing than we're used to these days and that sort of stuff. But it's a fun movie, and it's an excellent film, and I absolutely recommend it to anybody. And L.V. Moore, God rest his soul, what a human being. What a nice guy. I really liked him. He was great. That was the same night I spent drinking after the show with Harvey Korman and Tim Conway.
Here it is. Yeah, it's WBGT. Channel 46.7.
Yeah, so
I don't know if they're rebroadcast on cable, but it's on. It's
if you do antenna, you'll get it.
Yeah, if you get one of those antennas that you
digital antennas
set up in the window or behind your TV, you know, you'll see all those other channels that you go, "Oh, I really don't go to those." You know, maybe just 8, 10, and 13. But a lot of them now pick up a lot of other of those sub-channels like PBS and Fox and all these others that, you know, you aren't that well-known, but you should check them out.
Yep. And a lot of them, you know, you get comedy channels and
music.
Western channels and music channels, and you get all kinds of stuff. And, you know, depending on where you live, for example, I live in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill. I can get most radio stations in my fillings. So, you know, I bought a $10 digital antenna, and I pick up 50 stations.
Yeah.
If you're farther out, you might have to pay for a 30 or 40 or $50 antenna.
And if you can get it on your roof,
right
above all the other houses.
Yeah, you're way better.
And if you remember doing that in the olden days.
We had our antenna was in the attic.
Yeah,
because you happen to your window happened to point the right direction.
Yeah, so we had, you know, we would have walkie talkies. My dad had some walkie talkies, and every once in a while, I'd go up into the attic,
and he would have to turn it,
and he'd say, turn it to the left a little. Okay, turn it back to the right a little more. Okay, don't move. Leave it right there. Come on down.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong, especially, you know, I mean, radio waves and everything else still go through shingles and all that. It comes through your house that way, you know. I mean, it doesn't stop.
Well, I've said it many times. If we could see radio waves, we'd be blind.
Yeah.
Because they are everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in every frequency, and there's just dense. They're dense. And again, you know, that's the to bring it back. That's the kind of thing that Tesla was trying to harness. You know, the energy is being shot out into space and across the planet. And there, if we could harness that, if we could figure out a way to just stick up an antenna that not only pulled in the radio sounds, but also the energy of the wave, mm-hmm. we could power everything on the planet. You'd never have to plug a phone in again.
Yep.
So,
well, I think our country is slowly going more solar. I mean, it's just so much more efficient.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you like I was saying, you can get these panels now. They're like 2x2, and you can roll them up, and you can get a blanket of them that are maybe 2x6. They're 2x2 panels. But then they're rolled up, and they're maybe three long and two wide. You roll them up, and it can charge up batteries like crazy if it's a nice sunny day, and it's free energy.
And you can buy solar panels to stick on the dashboard of your car to charge your phone while you're driving. Now, of course, you can always charge your phone in the what used to be the cigarette lighter and now is the accessory plug.
Yep.
But if there's three or four of you in the car, somebody's going to be odd person out. So
you seen the pictures where someone puts a gas generator in their trunk so they can charge the car while they're driving?
Nice!
Which is how a lot of diesel electric, like locomotives and shipping containers and trucks work.
All that is a hybrid.
Yeah.
I mean, you laugh, but it's a hybrid.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, you go out 104 into Ontario and you'll see those tons of giant wind turbines.
Yep.
Down in down near Java and Attica, tons of wind turbines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you want to see a lot of them, you go over to up by it's up by the St. Lawrence, just over in the Canadian border, where Lake Ontario feeds into the St. Lawrence. But the little town across the river from there, for miles, you look in both directions, and it's got turbines up all over the place. Because, again, it's free energy. And, you know,
there's another website that shows the wind map of the United States.
I use that for my airplane.
Yes. And if you look at it, you can clearly see where you should build turbines.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very clearly.
Oh, yeah. And, again, like you said, it's free energy. You know, granted, the turbines, they have problems with them as far as once they die in that, you know, or get dented or disposing of them.
Right.
But
well, they're working on that.
Yeah. It's just like coming up with different materials, right, like everything else. You know, I mean, it's the newest thing out. And granted, it's been out for about 15 years. But, you know, again, it's evolved a lot since it first came out, even. And you can get smaller versions of it to just power a house. And, you know, it's not, really intrusive, you know, with these 40-foot blades and all this other stuff that, you know, you could sit there and...
Well, and they're looking at new designs. So at RIT, there's a whole series of wind turbines that are vertical. They're not big bladed.
Right, yeah, they go around
this way.
The wind catches it and it turns and it generates a lot of energy.
A lot of electricity, absolutely. And so, you know, they don't have to be... big blades. They can be fairly small other shapes that work just as well, just as efficiently.
Well,
and that's the big thing. It's the efficiency. You know, a wind turbine is not terribly efficient. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things they're working on. On the other hand, the wind you use to generate the electricity is free. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be terribly efficient in order to make some money.
Well, I saw where Amazon was playing around with a couple, you know, because they got a number of vans right now that are all electric. And what they've been doing is on a couple of these experimental ones, they've been using and hooking up an alternator that as the wheels are turning, it's charging, recharging the batteries that are sitting in the van. So the power, you know, even though they're electrical, and they're taking all that centrifugal force of the wheels, converting it back into energy by, you know,
regenerative braking.
A lot of electric cars do that automatically with the brakes.
Yeah.
And it's weird if you've ever driven one, because they stop very differently from a regular car.
I was driving a customer's Model Y, and I let go of the gas pedal like I normally do, and I stopped way too soon.
Way too soon, because it doesn't coast.
But
regenerative braking, you can turn that off, and then it'll coast.
I got used to it by the third turn.
Exactly. You get used to it very quickly. But that first time, it's like, what happened? It feels like there's an anchor out the back.
But the one problem with electric cars, though, is for deaf people. Because if they're crossing...
Well, deaf people aren't going to hear a car anyway.
But
it's
for
blind people.
And both of them, though. I mean, some deaf people... When you say... I guess I should clarify that.
Hard of hearing.
Yes, because there's different degrees of, you know, deaf people. Some people can still hear some stuff, but you got to get right into their face and, you know, yell at them and that. And they can usually hear cars and all that type of stuff. But these electric cars, they can't hear them. And the blind people can't see them.
Hear them at all. So, yeah.
Well, even hearing people. You won't look up from your phone and get hit by the
car. Yeah.
So I've read about some proposals to make electric cars put vroom vroom noises on.
Yep.
Well, and for car fanatics who just love that vroom vroom noise, they'll never get an electric car unless it makes that vroom vroom noise.
It makes the vroom vroom noise. It's electric cars have come a very long way. They still have quite a long way to go. The real problem with adoption of electric cars is the infrastructure. Where do you charge them?
And one of the problems even there, when there are chargers, is there's, what, four or five different standards?
Yeah.
So if your charger doesn't work... I read the stupidest story, and he got flamed, and it was probably on Reddit. So before the eclipse, one of the car motoring guys said, well, okay, I'm going to drive up to Western New York and watch the eclipse, and I think I'll test out an electric car. For a long distance drive? No.
Yeah.
And so he picked out a certain model car, and he gets to the first charging point, and there's no charger for his car. And so all the comments were, "You're stupid. You don't go long distance trips with an electric car. You picked a stupid electric car."
Well, right. That's part of it.
Yeah, and it's a completely unfair test.
And in many cases, you can buy adapters.
Yeah.
To make your car compatible with, say, a Tesla charger.
Yeah.
All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is history. It's in the books. But we're going to make history together, because there's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of me, Nick Francesco, and another hour of your phone calls. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We will talk about dang near anything you want to talk about, clearly, if you've been listening this last hour. But we will happily take your computer questions as well. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And in fact, you can watch A Boy and His Dog on both Apple TV and Amazon Prime Video.
There's usually some streaming service to have it.
Well, that may be my night sorted out.
Yeah.
Going back to the cars, though, one of the other big issues that they're having with the electric cars is, and it's a major one, is if they catch on fire, how to put them out.
Right.
Yeah, LiPo fires are burn hotter and longer. And
they've
stronger.
Even tried burying them to put out the fire. And so far, they still haven't come up with a good remedy.
They don't catch on fire much, but when they do.
Yeah, they're...
There was a video going around the RC community a couple of weeks ago. It was a portable phone charger, LiPo battery pack. You plug your phone in when you're on the go. But a dog had gotten a hold of it and started chewing it.
Oh, boy.
And pierced it. And you can see him jump and run away. And it was on a house security camera. And you saw it catch fire. The dog caught the dog's bed on fire. The dogs all escaped through the dog door, so they were all fine. But there was extensive damage to the house.
Yeah, I was going to say,
we don't realize how dangerous all of these things are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a point at which they weren't allowing laptops and phones on planes.
There's still a limit. 100 watt hours is as big as your battery can be to get onto an airplane. Nobody knows that.
Right.
Nobody knows how many watt hours their battery is.
Yeah, I guarantee you could ask half the people walking on an airplane with their laptops if they know that. And
even the kind of wonks who listen to us probably don't at this moment.
You could maybe get one out of the crowd.
Right.
One.
Now there's 50 of them looking it up right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
they
didn't know until they looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next news item. By the way, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Less than a month has passed since an issue with a CrowdStrike update left millions of Windows machines struggling to break free from a blue screen of death loop. But now a new blue screen threat has been revealed. An August 12th report from cybersecurity software company Fortra has detailed how a newly uncovered Windows vulnerability can lead to yet another blue screen of death. What's more, the researchers said, all versions of Windows 10 and Windows 11 are affected, even if all current security updates have been installed. The security vulnerability concerns the common log file system in Windows driver. When faced with an improper validation of specific quantities within input data, it will trigger a check function and result in the dreaded blue screen of death. Despite the ultimate payload of an exploit being pretty serious and requiring no user interaction, because the attack vector is local rather than remote, the vulnerability is graded as being of medium risk. This blue screen of death bug can impact all versions of Windows 10 and 11, as well as Windows Server 2022, regardless of whether they have been updated with all security patches to date. The researchers have shown that a user with no privileges can induce a system crash by using a specially crafted file. What can you do about it? Wait for a fix. Buy a Mac. Move to Linux. Get a sledgehammer. Hope and pray. Which are you going to do? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It seems to me that logging is about the simplest thing a computer can do. It's just, this happened, put it in a file.
What if I can't access the file?
Then there are fixes for that. This is not accessing the file. This is you didn't put in the right number of parameters.
So, yeah, then the error return should be in missing parameter.
Right, as opposed to whatever is going on in Windows, which crashes it. It's just ridiculous. Again, sometimes you can over-engineer something, and it's probably not nearly as good as the simplest solution. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Hey, I heard you guys talking about a boy and his dog.
Yeah.
Years ago, when I was at the U of R, they actually showed the movie to the student body, whatever, and they had Harlan Ellison there for comments afterwards.
Nice.
And so, of course, the movie is controversial to women for one group, and so I found out that night how abusive Harlan Ellison can be.
He was a nasty son of a gun. Yep. He truly was.
He was not taking any abuse or any comments. He was sticking up for his movie. He was sticking up for himself. It was quite a lively session after that movie.
Yep. Yeah, I can imagine. He was no holds barred, and he didn't care what other people thought.
That's right. I've also heard him on Star Trek retrospectives talking about how Star Trek messed up his scripts and didn't listen to him. And
widely regarded as the best Star Trek episode ever, written by Harlan Ellison. Harlan hated it because they changed it too much.
Yep.
Exactly. He almost disavowed the whole thing because of it wasn't done exactly the way he wanted.
Yep.
Well, it's the same thing with Alan Moore and The Watchmen.
Yeah.
Well, and everything he did, everything. He really hated every adaptation of every one of his comics.
I mean, they didn't even invite him to the movie premiere.
Right. Right. So, it's a fun film. It is a product of its time. And you have to say that. But it is pure Harlan Ellison.
And how much influence did it have on Fallout?
Well,
the video game and now
after
the TV series.
Right.
Yeah. So the dog in the movie was the Brady Bunch's first dog.
Yes.
Tiger.
Yep.
So he worked his way out of the desolate post-apocalyptic problems.
It was not politically correct before that term was even invented.
Well, exactly. Well, that was Harlan Ellison. I remember reading the book, the story, and when I got to the end, my first thought was, well, this will never be a movie.
Yeah.
And then it was.
Now, it's going to be interesting to see how they clean it up for television.
Oh, yeah.
They might stop it 10 minutes early?
Yeah, maybe, at least. My suggestion is you watch it on Prime if you want to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have two Linux issues. Well, the first of them is a recommendation. It's not a problem. Nick, you in the past have talked about not charging devices completely to 100% or not allowing them to go completely to zero.
Right.
And the apps that are able to do this automatically for you. And I actually have, on my Android tablet, I actually have the app that only takes it to, I guess, would be 80-90%.
Right.
On my Linux Ubuntu laptop, I was wondering if I could do the same thing, and I was looking for it, and I found an app that does it. But it's only good for the last two versions of Ubuntu. I'm still back at 2004, and there's actually a battery charge limit software that's good for 2204 and 2404 Ubuntu. It comes from Ubuntu Handbook, and it's called Battery Charge Limit. And there's online there is a web page that describes how to activate it. Apparently, that's in Ubuntu 2204 and 2404, but it may or may not be automatically activated by your supplier. But if you look up Ubuntu Handbook Battery Charge Limit, it talks about how to activate it. And, of course, when I installed it and tried to activate it, it said, it's not supported on your software version. But that's handy, and I thought that probably Ubuntu supported battery charge limiting, and it does.
Interesting.
Nice. That's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know which. I don't really know which version I'm running on this particular laptop. The problem is I tend to think of the kernel, so I'm running 5.15. That's not the version of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
It comes down to the fact that there is a folder within the system area of the Linux on Ubuntu. There is a folder, and if the limit is supported, there are two files, which basically are like what's the low point you want and what's the high point you want. And so if you go in and you look at that folder, if those files aren't in there, you know that your Linux version doesn't support it. And when you do install this and you have those files in there, you basically, either through the GUI or manually, I guess, you would set those up as to what are the low and high end points you want.
Yeah.
So
a lot of the bigger brand computers have now started putting that automatically in. Apple does. I think Lenovo does. In fact, on a Lenovo PC, once a customer got a notice saying, well, I notice you don't unplug your battery very much. Should I just drop it to 50% and maintain it there for you?
Yeah. Nice.
A lot of people buy laptops, but they sit on the desk all day long.
Yeah. That's exactly my situation. I mean, mine sits at 100% all the time, and I really don't want to, you know, wear out the battery. And so it's available if ever I jump off of Ubuntu 20 and I go to, you know, 24, which I should be at this point.
Right. Well, I'm at 22.
Yeah. 22 should be supported from what I read on this app. Yeah.
I'll take a look at it. Thanks. Did you put a link to that? Yeah, good. Thank you. One of the things that, you know, I run a desktop, so I don't care about it on the desktop. But as I've said many times, I used to take old laptops in, and I've still got a couple to send off to people. But the problem with them is, you know, it says 4 hours left, 2 hours left. You're out of battery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I get it. Keeping your battery charged all the time is bad for it. Draining it to zero is bad for it. Leaving it at 100% is bad for it. They say it's basically the 80-20 rule. Don't go above 80%. Don't go below 20%. And that has to do with things called dendrites and the way they can short out a battery and et cetera, et cetera. But if you can manage to keep your battery, and this is true for every battery you have, your phone, your tablet, everything. And I know that particularly on phones and tablets, there are apps that will let you do that. I have one for mine that gives me annoying noises whenever it hits 20 or 80%. So I can either plug it in or unplug it. And you should be doing that. You should always, it keeps your battery life as, and obviously this is not a 100% rule. So if like you're going on a trip, and you're going to be taking a plane, you're going to be in the air for 18 hours, but charge it to 100%. Fine. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis, the 20, you know, the 80-20 rule is where you want to be. Thanks.
Yeah. I have a question on the Linux Ubuntu file system. I have an SD card reader on the laptop, and I had a rather large capacity SD card. So I thought, geez, I'll back up some of my files off of the drive on the laptop, and I'll put it on this SD card. So I pushed the SD card in, and I looked at it, and it said SD card, you know, empty, whatever. Format is EXFAT. So I said, okay, put some files onto the card. The next time I put the card into the laptop, it showed the SD card is having file system fuse. So I wanted to ask you, Nick, what is file system fuse? What does this mean?
Fuse is the, let me think what the acronym is. File system in user space, I think. File system in user space. Basically, is designed for letting unprivileged users, that is to say, people who aren't the super user, to create and mount file systems without having them get into the kernel and deal with that. So almost every every storage device you plug into a Linux machine will start out in whatever format it's in. The next time it comes up, it'll come up as a fuse.
Okay. So,
just means is whatever file system this is, we're going to let you in.
Yeah, I've seen that in the Mac world. There's a program called MacFuse to do that, that lets you read non-Mac file systems.
Right.
Like exFAT.
Right. So if you were to reformat that to be ext4 or whatever, then you wouldn't see that. You'd always see ext4. But because it's an exFAT, that's a Windows format. And in order to use it, it has to recognize it, which it did that first time, right? Because it said it was exFAT.
Yeah.
And then the next time it says, oh, I see what you are, and I see there are files here. You want to use them, I'll mount them in user space.
Okay. So I shouldn't worry. I mean, I'm able to continue to write and read off this SD card. If I'm content with using this SD card strictly with this Linux laptop, I shouldn't have a problem in the future.
No, you shouldn't. It is working exactly like it's supposed to.
And other operating systems should be able to read that exFAT too through their own fuse.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that's good because I was doing this as a trial to make sure that I could put the files out on this thing and read them, write them, and the only thing that was a question was this word fuse suddenly popped up.
Right. It is marginally faster if you were to reformat the drive as ext4. Because that is Linux's native file format.
But then it would be less compatible with other OS.
But then you wouldn't be able to use it in other machines. So if you were looking to move those files or give them to somebody with a Windows or Mac machine, you wouldn't be able to. You might be able to, but it's not important. The point is, if you leave them as exFAT, every machine should be able to read them.
Yeah.
The other issue, too, is the write life of an SD card is much lower than other types of SSDs or even hard drives. So, what is it, 100,000 write cycles. So if you write to it once and then just read again and again and again, that won't be a problem. But if you frequently update your backup files on the SD card, you could wear it out sooner than you'd think. So it's funny. There's no moving parts, but SSDs still wear out about the same rate that physical hard drives do, just differently. And big companies like Backblaze and Google have done extensive tests on millions of hard drives and millions of SSDs, and they found about a 20% per year failure rate.
Right across the board.
Yep. Doesn't matter the technology. They all fail, just in different ways.
Yeah. Well, if I follow your 3-2-1 rule, and this card is only one part of the overall backup system, if this card, if I write to it occasionally and it eventually shows sign of failure, it's not going to be a big deal because it's part of a larger group of backups.
Right.
Exactly. And the typical range is generally between 10,000 and 100,000 write erase cycles.
Yeah.
So, even if it's at the low end, 10,000, you're good for a couple of days.
Right. And the likelihood of all three of your backups failing at once is really low.
That's why you have so many.
Yeah. The likelihood of you not getting around to replacing one before the next one fails is pretty high.
Pretty high.
Unfortunate.
So always have a few. They're cheap at like Amazon or wherever. I bought a bunch of 64 gig thumb drives for next to nothing, and I just leave them in a drawer, and if I need one, I pull it out, and I got it.
Yeah, I got a lot of my backups on USB thumb drives, and then when I saw the SD card and it wasn't being used for something else, I said, geez, I can store an SD or a micro SD card a lot easier than, storing a USB drive.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Okay, well, thanks for demystifying the word fuse for me.
All right, it was my pleasure, Ed. Thanks.
Thank you.
There's apparently a new portable storage format. I'm trying to remember what it was. We had a customer come in the other day. Even the SD cards have like a 1 terabyte limit.
Yes.
That's 1 terabyte limit. Okay. He shoots high-end video camera. And so this new drive has a 3 terabyte limit.
Oh, nice.
GCXD, something like that, for extended data.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I just listened to one of the previous callers about the battery life issue.
Yep.
I have it's actually a refurbished Dell Latitude 5411.
Yep.
And in the BIOS, it has the ability to set the maximum charge.
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
You can set the high and the low. It doesn't allow you to turn on the charger until you hit the low, but it automatically cuts off when you hit the high.
Nice.
So if I set it at, somewhere above 20% on the low side, it'll run until it goes down to 20%, and then it'll automatically accept the charge. You're going to plug the charger in, it just won't do anything. It'll say not charging.
Right.
And it cuts off at 20. And I don't know if that's on all laptops, but you have to go into the BIOS to find it.
Nice. I have not seen that on most laptops, but I don't have a lot of Dells.
Yeah, it was one that you had suggested was a good machine to put a Linux on.
Yep, I do have a Dell. I just haven't gone into the BIOS.
Yeah, I went to the. Well, of course, I'm trying to experiment with everything, and I figured, well, let me look, see what's there. You know, just clicked on everything, every option is.
That's the way to do it.
Which one of the things I understood? There were some things that I just didn't, but. But yeah, it did have that where you could set that limit, so you don't need to do an app, you don't need to worry about compatibility. I suppose that's the only laptop that I've ever played with it in the BIOS.
Well, I'll be looking at some of my laptops today to see if they have that in the BIOS. I wonder if Macs have it, we don't really have a BIOS as such.
No, so, not really, but there's a setting to optimize battery charging where it does do that. It won't charge it all the way. It won't charge if you're below 90% because it doesn't want to do trickle charges. And
right. All right. Excellent, Fred. Thanks.
Yeah, I have one question.
Yep.
One comment. I installed Super Anti-Spyware on a Windows machine that I use for my work stuff. And I'm using a hotspot Wi-Fi for Wi-Fi, and I could not log into anything. It would just sit there, and I got a couple messages about a VAST trying to block something. And so I went to my Revo One installer and uninstalled the Super Anti-Spyware, and everything seems to be working perfectly.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks. You too. Okay, that's interesting.
You must have installed one of their bigger programs that also does packet inspection and network monitoring.
Right.
Sometimes they can get too aggressive.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, that's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Take a quick break, but come on back, because there's a whole lot more of us coming.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at what time is it? I can't see.
1:34.
34 minutes after the hour. We're nothing if not professional here. We are sound bites.
And but we have fun doing it.
It's not important that we're good. What's important is that we're fun.
Yeah.
And this is weird. Okay. Never mind. I won't do it. I'll let.
Okay.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have two questions for you. I'll start with the Chromebook question.
Are you on a speakerphone?
I am.
Yeah, it sounds it.
Okay, hold on. I will switch the speaker off.
And he hung up. Sorry, Steve.
Try again, Steve.
That's an easy way to get rid of a question you want. Chrome?
Yeah.
He'll call back in a moment, I'm sure.
Yeah. Soon as he figures out that he's disconnected.
Speakerphones don't work very well on the radio. We can barely hear it ourselves here.
Right.
Before you call into our show,
you go.
Please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
And that was brought to you by Steve in Greece. Go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, where have you guys been? I've been trying to get you for hours. A couple questions. First one's a Chromebook question. The screen on my Chromebook is not extremely large. And across the top is the bookmark bar with bookmark computer, crowdfunding, all that stuff. Is there a way to turn that off so I've got a little bit more screen space?
Yes, you can. That is called the toolbar, the bookmark bar. And if you go into bookmarks and lists, one of the under the in your browser itself,
right,
the three button menu, one of the choices, if you pull that down, is bookmarks and lists, and I think the third thing down is called hide bookmarks bar.
Oh, that's what I want to do.
Control shift B or V? B as in bookmark.
Okay. Control shift and it's gone. Oh, thank you so much.
Certainly.
Apple did that years ago on their 12-inch computers because the screen is so small. They took off the scroll bar, so you scroll with your fingers, and they made so many things smaller. And those settings have stayed, even though I'm on a giant computer. I have a 27-inch computer in the office, and all those settings for a tiny screen are still there. I have to turn them all off.
One of the things I tend to do is take the toolbar that's normally across the bottom and put it on the left side because you've got more real estate left to right than you do up to down.
That's true.
So I do that. But, yeah, you can move that stuff around. And, of course, you can actually create folders on the bookmark bar if what you're worried about is the amount of real estate left to right.
Okay.
And things falling off the end. You can create folders just like you can in the bookmarks themselves. And then, you know, group. So I have one for personal stuff. I have one for Google stuff. I have one for social media. So all of the, you know, my social media connections are in that one folder on the button bar.
Right. Oh, excellent.
The other thing you can do, of course, is to, in most Chromebooks, they have an HDMI cable, so if you've got a large monitor.
Or a TV, even.
You can hook that up and use it as your external monitor.
And I can actually cast to my TV.
Exactly.
Did you see that Google is shutting down their Chromecast? They're going to stop selling Chromecasts?
They're selling a different device instead.
Oh, don't scare me.
Yeah.
Don't scare me. So I have another question. This one's an Amazon Dot question. I have been buying Amazon Dot since 2018, and I upgrade, which means I've got an extra, and then I upgrade again, and I got another extra. I would like to just put them in a friend's garage sale, get rid of them, but I have to get off of them.
Right.
But I have a list. They just list them all. I have no idea. Is there a way to figure out what, when you go to your web page with the list of the dots you own or the devices you own, there's a list, but I have no idea which one goes with which dot.
Right. What you can do is reset your Amazon Echo Dot, which brings it back to the factory settings.
Right. And then log into the ones I want to keep again.
Well, you don't have to do them all. You just reset the ones you don't want anymore.
But I don't know how to identify the ones I don't want.
Well, you're doing it physically.
Oh.
So what you do is you take that particular Echo Dot.
Yeah.
Press and hold the volume down and Microsoft off buttons.
Microphone.
What did I say?
Microsoft.
Cheese and crackers. Put me in a home today. I'm just having one of those. I've been having one of those days.
It's okay. We all get them.
We all get them in today's mind. Press and hold both the volume down and microphone off buttons for 20 seconds. And then the light ring will turn itself off and on again. And that has put it into setup mode. Erases all your personal informations, all your device settings, and all your smart home connections.
Exactly what I want to do. You guys are just the best.
Thank you. That's the easiest way to do it.
Yep.
If you've got, depending on which Amazon Dot you have, it may be the action button.
Right.
You may have one with an action button. You just hold that down for 20 seconds. Again,
I'll go back to Generation 2, as I said, 2018. I have no use for them, but maybe somebody does.
No, it makes sense. Absolutely. They're still useful for a lot of things. One of the nice things about them is that if you have multiples, you can set up a home...
Intercom.
Sorry, what?
Intercom,
exactly.
Yep.
So that, you know, I can say, broadcast to my home, it's time for supper.
Yep.
And then every room hears it's time for supper, and everybody gathers. So
my boss had to do that with her kids to get them up for school in the morning.
Oh yeah,
she would crank, tell Steve's speaker to play a song at 100% volume.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd do it.
Yeah. <right. laughs>
Okay. Thank you very much, guys. You have a good day. Enjoy the. It's going to rain, but enjoy it before it does.
Yeah, exactly right. Enjoy the rain. Why not? As long as it's there, you might as well enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's better than the alarm system they used in the Marine Corps. When we were first at boot camp, our first couple of days, what we got woken up to is the DI picking up the ash can and throwing it down the squad bay. It's, holy!
Bang, bang, bang,
And him go, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, you know, screaming in your face.
Yep.
Oh,
so, but it woke you up.
Yeah, today
to this day, you don't want to come over and you go ahead, keep your distance and say wake up, but you don't want to.
Don't jiggle me, don't grab me.
No,
I get that.
I come up swinging usually.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah, today is National Model Aviation Day. I got my Model Aviation t-shirt on. This is last year's. I didn't get one this year. So, of course, it has to rain and be windy.
Yeah, of course.
But so
I believe that's a rule.
Yeah. So we're hoping for next weekend is my club's big annual Memorial Air Show.
And who's announcing at that show?
I'll be emceeing at the air show. Yeah,
nice.
So I won't be here next week. But it's Saturday and Sunday. Airplanes galore. Free parking, free admission. Bring your own limited seating, so bring your own lawn chair if you want. We're going to have concessions and all kinds of cool stuff. We're going to be doing night planes. So on Saturday night, we're going to fly some light-up planes. I was testing my light-up plane on Monday and had a problem. But since it was lit up, it was easy to find.
There you go. Very nice.
And I'll put a...
You don't call it a crash anymore. It's had a problem.
Yeah. On what is it? Unscheduled landing.
Unscheduled landing.
Plug for my group. Matter of fact, if you folks haven't ever been to or know about, but Sherlock, down, if you go up Lake Avenue, just about to the beach, on your right-hand side is St. Anthony's Church. And in the back is the lighthouse, Charlotte Lighthouse. And this weekend is the what they call Lighthouses on the Air. And if you ever wanted to check out both the lighthouse and ham radio, they are putting on a demonstration today from 11 to 5 and also Sunday from 11 to 5 through the Rara Group to make contact with other lighthouses around the world.
Nice. Yep. And RARA stands for Rochester
Area Radio Association.
There you go. It's not just a bunch of people who are...
walking around with walkie-talkies.
Interested about something.
Yeah, no, yeah. As a matter of fact, we just got a brand new radio last year, and we hook it up to through the HDMI to a nice big 20-inch screen so you can see what's going on as we're dialing around and getting to the frequencies and that type of stuff. And there's a lot of folks up there to explain it. And if you want to give it a shot, you can go on the air also. We have expert extra licensed people there that can, you know, tell you how to try to get on the air and learn about ham radio.
Nice. And do you have any number stations on the air?
I forget the call sign that they're using this year. But it is a club station.
No, I'm talking about those number stations they used to have in the Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
Where people would just sit there and say, 4, 27.
Oh, yeah, no.
308.
No. No, you'll hear...
And if you don't type them in the right order, their bunker explodes?
Exactly.
Yeah, no. You'll hear other stations, like we go up and down the coast, believe it or not, quite a bit. New England and up in Maine and even over in Nova Scotia. We made last year contacts to those lighthouses. And they're set up just like we are. And we've got the antennas going up into trees and even up one up to the side of the lighthouse. And there's also a tour, usually, I forget what time that starts, to go through the old Charlotte Lighthouse.
Nice.
Yeah, it's quite an experience for
folks. You're willing to climb all those stairs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get a kick out of the address of the lighthouse is Lighthouse Street, Rochester.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Yep. Off of Lake North Alatta.
Yeah, so. It's
like I say, interesting because it's not at the edge, it's not at the end of the river right on the lake.
Right. It's well, back in the day before it was all built up, that was
the end of the river.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but
well, it's not about where it is on the river. It's about where the obstacles are in the river.
Yeah.
That you have to deal with.
So, and like I say, if you go all the way up Lake Avenue, just past Latta and the Stetson Street Bridge, you'll see St. Anthony's Church right there. You're pulling into the church and drive to the back a little bit. It's on the back side of the parking lot there. There's ample free parking. You know, you can just park right there and wander over and say hello.
It's a fun thing.
Yeah. Bring the family. That's what we're trying to do. Yep. It's also get kids.
Family-friendly event. We've got buddy boxes, so you can practice flying a plane without putting any money in yourself.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I was up to Charlotte. Actually, Irondequoit Bay, and I was up there in the pavilion doing what we call a POTA, and I had these kids, family, just came over there, they sit up, and they're doing all this food, and you could smell it. Oh, it smelled so good, Indian food, and it was smelling really good, and all of a sudden, these three girls come over, and the dad's going, oh, I don't want them bothering you, don't want them bothering you. I said, no, that's fine, and they wanted to know what I was doing and talking all over the world. They go, really?
And it used to be that becoming a ham operator was both expensive and painful because you had to know Morse code.
Yeah, you don't have to
anymore. But you don't anymore, and so it's much easier, much simpler. The hardware is cheaper than it used to be, or maybe I just make more money than I used to. So there's a lot. There's a lot that's different about it.
Well, a lot of times, you just buy a little tiny box, you know, an SDR, a software design radio, looks like a Raspberry Pi. Plug it into your computer, and your computer does all of the ham radio things.
Right.
I stand corrected. It's Holy Cross. I don't know why I was thinking St. Anthony's. It's Holy Cross Church.
Oh, that makes more sense to
me. Yeah.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense to
me. Holy Cross Church, right there on the right-hand side. Thank you, Walter. I think it was that called and corrected me. But like I say, we try to make it a family event, like Steve's flying in there. You know, something the whole family can get into. And matter of fact, we had one gentleman bring three of his daughters and his wife. Just last year, all of them passed their license. Matter of fact, the youngest one not only passed her technician, but passed her general. Her other two sisters, who were older, they were close. They came the following session and passed it, but she was able to come in there.
Oh, and she's never going to let him forget it.
Oh, no.
Not ever in her entire life.
No way, Jose.
Right.
Yeah, that was so cute, though.
No, that's very sweet. And to get back to flying, there are lots of inexpensive planes you can get started with as a hobby. Just like there are inexpensive radios you can start with, they're not going to give you you're not going to be talking to people in Australia, maybe.
Yeah.
Unless the atmosphere,
which really right now you could.
The bounce works.
But you got to put $1,000 into a radio and equipment in there. You know, but like Steve, you know, the same thing. You can see the different planes that you want to try. And, you know, not go for the Cadillac.
Yeah.
Start out with a little mid-size one that you can learn and burn with.
You can easily start at $100, and then I like watching YouTube videos of $50,000 airplanes and their demise now and then. So one of the YouTube channels.
When you're looking at a $50,000 plane, you want to see the demise.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the YouTube channels I follow, they're fairly beginners. You know, he's only been at it 10 years.
Oh, is that all?
And he went to a big air show, and somebody let him fly his $10,000 airplane. He said, "Okay, good. Here, take the control back. Take it back. I don't want to crash."
Right. But that's that I gotta say, the beauty of flying a model airplane is that freedom, that feeling of being up in the sky, and it's a beautiful thing. Just like the beauty of doing ham radio is that you're talking to people all over the world. Every single day.
K2JD.
Yep. Like I say, we've got literally three, and I should know them because I'm administered for all three. We've got three different call signs that are specific to our club. They're registered under our club, and I'm constantly handing them out to various groups to use for, like, just weekend and that type of stuff.
Yep. Remember when we used to do live remotes from the Hamfest at the Dome?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
And I thought computer people were crazy.
Yeah.
Ham people, they're crazy.
Yeah, they are.
They're all wearing their radio. They've got the little thing on their shoulder, and they're talking to each other across aisles.
I'm in aisle 6, and I found this really cool thing. Well, I'm in aisle 7. I'll be right there.
Exactly.
The thing of it is, is they get set up for that. Because, like, matter of fact, this weekend, there's another big ham show in Huntsville, Alabama. But the big one is in Dayton. And literally, you will see them walking around with their radios because this is set up on acres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes you at least, a friend of mine went, and he did, he went for the weekend. He went for 4 days. And it was only, you know, Friday-ish a little bit. The vendors were setting up, but then Saturday and Sunday is the big thing. He did not see everything,
right?
Because there is so much, and with the crowds, and if you're looking for a certain item, these folks would sit there and say, "Yeah, come on over to this pavilion, because the stuff is over here."
Mm-hmm. Well, and that used to be PC Expo.
Yeah.
I mean, it took up the Javits Center and whatever the thing was that was next door. I forget the name of it.
Remember downtown, they used to have, what was that?
We used to have one downtown as well.
The PC Expo.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was on both floors for the longest time, and you could go there for that convention. We used to go up there for the radio station.
Yep.
Yeah.
I used to go to the ones in New York because I spoke at them. And at first they treated you like royalty, which was great, but... You got, you know, there was a room off to the side where the speakers could congregate. And sometimes you needed that.
Yeah.
Because the noise level on the floor, just everybody enthusiastic and happy and talking about stuff, but the noise level would give you a headache. Yeah.
Remember Comdex?
Yeah.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
PC Expo in New York and Comdex in Las Vegas?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah. Yep. I went to that many years as when I was president of PC Cube.
Yep.
And that's where I got to meet Bill Gates, Dennis Hayes, and Peter Norton.
Yeah, those people would be at every one of these
events.
Yeah, and they were nice. They would sit down with you and chit-chat.
Just don't talk business, and you got them talking about other stuff. Oh, they could go on for... Peter Norton was really cool.
Yeah.
And you can never... There's never enough time to see everything. I'm starting to go through the videos now from Oshkosh, one of the largest air show in the world. You know, it runs like Sunday to Sunday. They had over 10,000 airplanes.
Yeah.
1,000 exhibitors. Wow. 700,000 people attended during the week, and everyone is saying, I was there all week, and I didn't, people keep saying, did you see this? No. Did you see this? No. How about, did you see this? No. Ah!
Yep.
This year was a big Burt Rutan anniversary, so they had hundreds of Burt Rutan-designed aircraft. The banana, where the wing is on an angle and the engines are offset.
Oh, yeah.
Weird looking plane. There were like three of them there.
Yep. The same was true of things like PC Expo and Comdex. You couldn't see all of it.
Yeah.
But for me, the best part as a presenter was the Monday when people broke down.
Yep.
You know, and you could walk around and they would have, you know, hundreds of tchotchkes that hadn't been given away.
I don't want to ship it back.
Take what you want. Yeah. I actually got a dirigible, a little airship. I guess it was a blimp because it wasn't rigid. We talked about that last day.
Yeah.
Last Sunday. Oh, and that just reminds me, Sunday nights at 9 p.m., soundbites.org/lounge. If you go there at 9 p.m. or slightly after, you will see a link to the video chat that we do every Sunday night from 9 to 10. You're more than welcome. If you've got a computer question, you just want to chit-chat, or you just want to watch, you don't have to participate. That's perfectly fine. But we meet there from 9 to 10, courtesy of Mastermind Lounge, every Sunday night. And for those of you who are members of Ask Nick, my newsletter, we do that on Wednesday nights. But you have to be a member of the newsletter to get in. So, but you can... You can join that one if you remember. And again, we answer people's computer questions in a slightly more intimate, maybe, atmosphere.
One thing I used to love about Comdex, in the first year that I went down, I discovered you go up to the main distributors, like, say, CorelDRAW or WordPerfect and all these different companies.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
And, say, hey, I'm president of the computer user group. Any chance of you sending us a copy of their... What's your name? Your address?
Yep.
And I was, for the longest time, getting samples of the software when it came out and... or even the Windows, you know, and that type of stuff that they'd send us because of the U, and mention their product in their newsletter and get the word out. And they'd love sending it. And our group grew quite a bit because we were giving away so many great, software packages and that type of stuff at our meetings.
I used to do project management for a living, and I don't remember any of the buzzwords anymore. But I remember being at a PC Expo and sitting down with a guy, and he said, oh, I manage Microsoft Project. And I said, why doesn't it do this and this and this and this and this? He said, give me your name and address. You're going to be a beta tester.
Yeah, that, I loved beta testing back when we could.
It was that easy in those days. All right, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week. Good information. Again, we love getting information as much as we like getting questions. But we are done for this week. Please, please join us tomorrow night at 9, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, /lounge, soundbites.org/lounge. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, for me, Nick Francesco, for everybody at Jazz 90.1, we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?